Now, though, in some parts of our state, getting on a plane to Sydney is pretty hard. Airlines choosing not to service some towns, airfares being way too expensive, or in the case of my next guest, some airlines having a limit on how many wheelchairs they allow on any flight. You're just about to hear from Ballina disability advocate Kelly Cox, but I'd really like to hear your experiences about getting a flight. There are stories around about a family having a skin condition and being refused to fly. 1-300-66-2279. Give me a call or send a text 0467-922-684. Kelly Cox, good afternoon.
Hi, thanks for having me.
What happened to you when you were in Canberra? And firstly, why were you there?
I went down for, it was a last minute call to action around the Royal Commission into Disability Abuse. So lots of disabled people from around the country jumped on a plane as quick as they can to get down there and talk to the politicians around why we need a Royal Commission.
And what happened when you were trying to get back home to the Northern Rivers? Firstly, it was hard to get a taxi in Canberra that you could put your wheelchair on in.
It was. Taxis and wheelchair users, it's an ongoing struggle. So what happened was my taxi was very late, and because I need one that can accommodate a wheelchair, you can't just jump in any cabs. You've got to wait for specific taxis. And then, unfortunately, there was a bit of a mishap while we were driving and the spare tyre fell off the taxi on the road. And, yeah, that resulted in me missing the flight I was booked on initially, which then triggered a whole host of issues, including Jetstar's 2-wheelchair policy.
Now, that impacts you when you're travelling with your partner.
Correct. My partner's also in a wheelchair, so we're the whole... Anytime we want to fly, we are the quota for wheelchairs. So if anybody else needs assistance on that flight, either we can't fly together or we can't go at all, or it means somebody else will get bumped off the flight. It's tricky.
Is it easier for you to fly out of the Gold Coast or on another airline out of Lismore, say?
Lismore's a little trickier. It's a smaller airport again, and I believe it's been a little while since I've done it, but I think it's only Rex that fly out of Lismore, which I tend to not fly with too often.
Is that because of the size of their planes?
It can be the size of their planes, yeah. And sometimes airline has funny rules around if you're a wheelchair user or a person with a disability flying, that they want you to have a carer or a companion with you. And often I travel alone, so I can get tripped up by those kinds of issues as well.
So what's the process for organising a flight if you need your wheelchair?
Oh, it's certainly not as straightforward as non-disabled people. You've got to find your flight and book your ticket like anyone else would, and then you need to then call and talk to a different department in the airline and let them know that you've got a wheelchair, how much it weighs, what the dimensions are, if it's got a battery, what kind of battery that is. So you have to give them all of that information and make sure that, you know, if it's Jetstar or an airline that has a 2-wheelchair policy, that you can get on that flight. Often you might book a flight, as happened to me in Canberra, and then be told, no, sorry, you can't get that flight.
And I hear that actually getting through to that department where they do look after you once you get there can be a bit of a minefield the first time you try and get there.
Yeah, it can be tricky, and particularly for people. I fly quite often now, and so I'm quite familiar with the process, but it's a pretty daunting task, and often the people on the other end of the phone don't always know. They can see some questions that they have to ask, but they don't necessarily know what that means. So there's different types of batteries, and when you're flying with a battery, that can have an impact. So, yeah, so if you don't know all the information that you need to give the airline and the person on the other end of the phone doesn't really understand the questions they're asking, it can get more complex again.
What about actually physically getting on and off the planes? How tricky is that?
again, it comes down to the knowledge of the people who are working for the airline or the airport on that day. So when you arrive at the airport, you check in, as everybody does, and often all of that information that you provided when you booked your ticket isn't on the system anywhere, so then you have to provide it all again and have the same conversations around dimensions and batteries and weight of the wheelchair. And then often what will happen is they'll say, you have to get there over an hour earlier if you're flying with a wheelchair. And so often what will happen is they say, well, we want your wheelchair right now. And you kind of go, well, no, that's not possible.
Because yeah, what are you going to do for an hour in the airport? Where are you going to be? What can you do?
That's right. And the wheelchairs that they want you to use aren't wheelchairs that you can move yourself around in. So for me, when I travel alone, and I've got a motorised wheelchair, I can't push myself in a manual wheelchair, even if one was available. So it means that if I was to give them my wheelchair, I'd be stuck sitting in a corner wherever they put me in the very uncomfortable chairs to sit in at the best of times, and certainly not something that you want to do for any longer than needed. So that can often be a bit of a debate at the check-in as well. When are you going to hand over your wheelchair, and how long you can leave that before that has to happen?
So hopefully it's the last possible moment. Then they will put you in one of their, help you, assist you into one of their wheelchairs and organise a lift onto the plane?
Yeah, that's right. So I will slide from my wheelchair over onto one of their wheelchairs, where someone will then, an airline staff member, will push that wheelchair up to the area of the plane. In the regional airports, there's little lifts that you go up and down in where the stairs are. So someone will do that, and then you get onto the plane, and then you kind of slide over into to the airline seat, and then stay in that seat until you arrive at your destination, and then do the whole thing in reverse.
Now, most of the seats, do the arms lift up on the aisle or not? Because it would be hard getting into a seat, I would imagine.
Yeah, so the arms lift up in the aisles. Unfortunately, you know, for people who might want to fly in business class, those arms don't lift up. So you are restricted to always flying economy, which can be problematic if you're going on a long trip and you need, because of your disability, you need a bit more space or you need to stretch your legs. So, yeah, there's all kinds of things that end up being problematic and quite restrictive in what you can and can't do. It also becomes an issue if there's people in the seat next to you. So often you'll be in the aisle because that's the seat that you've slid over to. And then if somebody needs to get in and out to the window seat, it gets really tricky.
If they want to get up to the toilet and so forth.
Yeah, that's right. So I always ask when I check in if they could block those seats so that there's nobody needing to climb over me to get in and out. And often that's accommodated, but sometimes if the flight's full, that's not possible.
And is weather an impact too? Does weather impact the flights?
The weather can impact if you're in a regional airport where you do have to use that outside lift. It's quite tall and quite narrow, so when it gets windy, it gets a bit sketchy going up and down that. And if the wind is too strong, they won't let you actually catch a flight. So that happened to a friend of mine recently when we had Cyclone Omar up in the area, and he was meant to fly home, and his, you know, flight got cancelled because of the wind, and then I think it was four flights he got changed to during the day, and he ended up having to fly back to Brisbane and then make his way back to Ballina, which, you know, is not ideal
either. No, it's a good long drive and getting transport and so forth. Are there any ways that this process could be made simpler and easier for people?
I think that the two wheelchair policy has had its day. I think when so a woman named Sheila King actually took Jetstar to court a few years back to challenge that policy, and Jetstar won that case based on the fact that they were a budget airline and it would cause some hardship to adjust that policy. I think that Jetstar have grown a lot since then. I don't know that we could still say fairly that Jetstar is a budget airline. And I think it's definitely time to relook at that policy and lift it.
I'm talking to disability advocate and traveller Kelly Cox in Ballina. Let's go to Samantha French. Sam is a senior policy officer in employment and accessibility with People with Disability Australia and joins us now. Good afternoon. You've been listening, Sam, to Kelly's story. Is that a familiar one?
Ah, yes. Hello. Good afternoon. Look, yes, she's raised a number of issues that we hear often of the frustrations and the challenges that people with disability face when trying to fly, as well as other types of public transport. But, yes, definitely we hear complaints a lot around frustrations around breakdown in communication, inflexibility in procedures that airlines are following, staff perhaps not being as aware as they should be about the rights of people with disabilities to fly. Issues in particular for regional and remote areas which rely only, you know, where they're reliant on the smaller aircraft and also the low-cost carriers and the restrictions that they have around their models of operation. So absolutely, there's a whole range of issues that have been raised, around accessibility.
What are our rights if we go to get on a plane and someone says, well, there was a story my colleague Herman Lamont did, a family, the mother and the child had a skin disease and they were refused to be able to fly. How can an airline, what sort of rights do we have and what sort of rights does the airline have when it comes to who travels?
Look, I think airlines sometimes, airlines definitely have in greater rules around safety and what's dictated by aviation laws in terms of safety, but also and perhaps certain communicable diseases are definitely raised by airlines. As you know, they may refuse to carry somebody if they've got a particular condition. But a skin condition by a family being refused, of a family and being refused travel. I'm not a lawyer, but I think that's very quite discriminatory, and I don't see any reason why that family would not have been able to fly if it's. Again, sounds like it's a more attitudinal barrier that's been placed in the way of that family travelling around assumptions that are being made around, you know, how that might affect other passengers. So often it comes down to, I guess, in terms of the rights of people with disabilities, have the same right as others to travel by airlines and to be able to get from A to B when needed. And as they wish to. So to have that refusal of the family without knowing the details, I don't know the details of this one, it sounds to me like that's discrimination and was unlawful.
Do you think we should ask airlines to put more than two seats aside a flight for people travelling with wheelchairs?
Yeah, look, we don't believe there needs to be such restrictions anymore. I agree with the previous speaker. Sorry, I didn't catch her name.
Kelly Cox.
Kelly. That, you know, this is outdated. So appreciate that the federal court did make a ruling in 2012. We didn't agree with the ruling back then, and we certainly don't agree with it now. That I believe the basis of that ruling was that it was a low-cost carrier that had certain restrictions in turnaround times. And really, this comes down to, you know, we don't believe that that's a reasonable grounds on which to have a two wheelchair policy. So no, I don't think that case should have got up in the first place. But also, that it's outdated and it should not be permitted to continue.
Are there other people with disabilities that face challenges, in particular flying with our airlines here in Australia?
Sure, absolutely. Look, I think there's a whole range of experiences that people have and a whole range of barriers that people face. For example, I'm a person who has a vision impairment. I'm blind. I know that when I travel, there's a lot of difficulty in terms of communication. But I want to pick up on one issue that Kelly mentioned around communication and the time that it takes to actually make a booking and communicate with an airline, and then the time restrictions or restraints, rather, that they place on how people with disability can and can't travel. So that is a really interesting area, I think, that could easily be remedied, and yet airlines place restrictions in the way that their models of operating and the procedures that staff will follow. In terms of the other people with other types of disability that may face barriers, absolutely. I mentioned, you know, barriers for people with vision impairment, barriers
so what are some of the
hearing impairment.
Yeah, so what are some of the impairments you've faced as a result when flying with your...
With my particular disability?
Yes.
Yeah, and look, I've travelled both domestically and internationally with people with a whole range of disabilities when we've been travelling to do advocacy work. From my personal experience, it's really around communication, information, having access to that information. There is a service which Kelly was talking about, Meet and Assist, and particular assistance for people who use wheelchairs or have other access needs. And sometimes that just the procedure breaks down and you're not met, you're not assisted in the way that you needed. Another issue that Kelly mentioned was the lack of individualised response. So airline staff making assumptions about, based on your type of disability, what needs you may have. And rather than listening to the individualised needs of a particular passenger, traveller, and then adapting procedures accordingly. So in my experience, the fact that I'm recorded as legally blind has meant that there's been a lot of assumptions around the type of assistance I've needed. In fact, I don't use a cane or a guide dog. I have some sort of very limited vision, but I'm also used to travelling regularly, so I can do a certain part of the journey independently and others not.
So what would you like someone to actually ask you what you need and what you're fine about?
There's a few things. Firstly, yes, obviously, yeah, I mean, that definitely. But I think there's a few things. The procedures that are set up on their website, the procedures that you're required to follow as a person with disability, that needs to be more flexible. There also needs to be better communication about, particularly in terms of change of aircraft, or for me, if I'm required to change from an aircraft which is only you have to access on the tarmac, is very problematic for me, as it would be inaccessible for many others. Mm-hmm. So just not communicating when there's changes to services, changes to aircraft, or not communicating directions, not listening to what the person says their needs are, and really just sticking to procedure as they believe, you know, one size does not fit all.
Indeed, it doesn't in this world. Thank you so much for your time, Sam.
No worries. Thanks a lot.
That's Samantha French, Senior Policy Officer on Employment and Accessibility with People with Disability Australia. And we heard too from Disability Advocate and Ballina Traveller. We had Kelly Cox with us on Statewide Drive.